Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices impact tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Chris Kington Barker is hosting the program virtually today. Her guests will be joining today's show on Zoom to talk about the We Are the Care initiative and the online family-friendly workplace toolkit for employers in San Luis Obispo County. We encourage you to participate by sending us your questions or comments for today's guests by email to voices@kcbx.org, or you can call them in at 805-549-8855. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Chris.
Across the globe, businesses of all sizes are recognizing that supportive policies and practices increase organizational productivity, while across also boosting the physical, emotional health of employees and their families. The COVID-19 pandemic has highlighted the overlapping lines between work and life and provides a unique opportunity to consider how family-friendly options may be incorporated at businesses everywhere. Today, I'm joined by a broad range of community partners involved in We Are the Care initiative in collaboration with key businesses and local chambers of commerce in San Luis Obispo County. They've launched an online family-friendly workplace toolkit for the county. In the first half of today's program, my guests will talk about what family-friendly workplace is and how the initiative came into action. Wendy Wendt, Executive Director with First Five San Luis Obispo County, Maggie Payne, Beginning Preschool and Toddler Program Director at Atascadero Children's Center, and Molly Kern, Director of Governmental Affairs with San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce. In the second half of today's program, I'll be visiting with local employers who saw the benefits and how they see it benefiting local employers and employees. Kelly Boss, Human Resources Director with iFixit, Z Nakasha, partner and co-founder with Carmel and Nakasha LLP, and Angela Toomey, Human Resources Director with Morris and Garitano. As a reminder, you can be part of this discussion too by calling us with your questions and comments. You can call again at 805-549-8855 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. And good afternoon. I'm going to start with Wendy and Maggie and Molly first, and it's great to see all of you. And this is really an exciting topic, having been an employer here in San Luis County. And Wendy, I'm going to first start with you about how do you even define a family-friendly workplace?
Hi, Chris. First of all, it's just a pleasure to be here again with you today, talking about the work of First Five and our increasing partnerships with both public and private sector community members across the county to look at ways that we can better support families raising children in our community. Simply spoken, a family-friendly workplace is one where the employer has practices or policies in place that make it possible for their workforce to more easily balance family and work and to fulfill both their family and work obligations. And so this was a concept that we were working towards, talking about, innovating with some of our business partners before the era of COVID. And it felt like kind of a unique and special concept that we were really trying hard to move out into the community. And then the pandemic hit, and we've been experiencing life in this completely different way over the last year, such that family-friendly workplace has become the norm for many, many of us. So it's a really exciting opportunity both to sort of learn from the crisis and imagine moving forward into a better time out of our recovery experience that includes some of these practices over the long term. So it's an exciting project to be working on, ironically enough, in the midst of this crisis.
Yeah, you mentioned that this started pre-COVID, pre-pandemic. What were some of the driving forces that were bringing this kind of desire together for the collective prior to that?
It's a great question. I'll start the story, and I'm actually going to pass it to Maggie because Maggie has been involved along with several others on this call since the beginning of a conversation that initially focused on what we were calling the childcare crisis. And as you pointed out, we've been on Central Coast Voices before talking about challenges around accessing affordable quality childcare for working parents in our community. It's been a really difficult challenge for a long time. And so back in 2019, a group of folks got together, not just people in the childcare industry and not just parents, but also business and public sector leaders, both in San Luis Obispo County and further afield, to talk about what opportunities we have to build capacity in childcare. And so that's when I got to meet Maggie at that early stage in that conversation. We had this town hall called Where's the Care, which pretty quickly converted to a movement, for lack of a better word, that we call We Are the Care. And so
so Maggie I'll take it, has a great take it story over to Maggie.
Tell. Yeah.
Yeah. So Maggie, if you can continue that story.
Hi, Chris. Hi. So for us, We Are the Care has been really something that started small and has grown. And we are really excited for all of the different opportunities to offer solutions to this crisis and for these people in our community in different capacities to work together to come and find solutions. And so after the town hall meeting, we split off into a couple different task forces. The different task forces all started looking at different solutions, different ways we could set goals for our community. And I think that the cross-sector collaboration task force is our family-friendly workplace, you know, kind of focus. They were coming together and they were looking at what are some solutions that the childcare crisis can start to be solved by, and childcare offering more spots, that takes a lot longer than some of the other options that we had. And so a family-friendly toolkit for employers was really the way to start going about that. And so their family-friendly, you know, workplace toolkit is something that is basically one of the ways that we saw a quick solution almost, where you don't have childcare, you're an employee, you're struggling. And if your employer says, hey, you know, I am flexible, that is something that we don't have to worry about right now. You're able to have a different schedule or just come back to work in a different capacity. That's a way for us to solve, quote, our, you know, childcare crisis, because this doesn't even then have to touch a lot of the other factors that are involved. So our family-friendly toolkit is something that is we're really proud of, and we're really happy to be able to offer to the community to help the employers in San Luis Obispo County and our greater community to really start to support their employees and families and children in San Luis Obispo County.
You mentioned, Maggie, that there was a town hall meeting. Can you tell me a little bit about who was invited to and attended that town hall meeting?
Sure, I'll jump back in on this one.
Okay.
I was one of the hosts on that initial town hall. There were about 150 people who came, and it really ran the gambit of business leaders, mayors, people from the Board of Supervisors. We had a guest speaker from the executive leadership team at Patagonia, Inc. to talk about the way a nationally recognized company has been able to incorporate family-friendly workplace practices and childcare, on-site childcare, into their business DNA. We had parents, we had just interested community members who wanted to both try to understand the nature of the childcare crisis in SLO County and then also lean in on solutions. So it was really, it felt like a call to action. And it's been quite amazing to see how that has actually manifested itself. As Maggie was saying, we've got these task forces working on a variety of different projects. We're about to mobilize a 2021 reinvigoration kickoff event on the 21st of January to sort of relaunch our next season of work together on We Are the Care. And so it's quite exciting. And as she mentioned, the toolkit is one of these projects that bubbled out of that emerging movement. And it's online, available for anyone to take a look at.
And, you know, while we're talking about that, can Maggie, can you say where online that's available?
Yeah, actually, if you, there's two different ways to kind of get to that toolkit, but the We Are the Care initiative is part of the First Five website where you can learn more about the different task forces and their goals and the meetings that we'll be having. And you can also go to slowfamilyfriendlywork.org, and that's where you'll be able to access the toolkit and all of the resources that are available, which really, there's a plethora of different ways that employers from, you know, I don't want to say easy to hard, but from, you know, difficult to less difficult to implement are available. So that really this is a major way that a solution can be found for the crisis here in our county.
Is this toolkit primarily to be accessed by employers, or are you also encouraging that individuals that are employees access the toolkit and maybe bring this to their employers or come with their own ideas about, hey, what if we did this?
I yes. definitely think both. Yeah.
All of the above.
I think that employers can find a lot of resources here that would help them to better understand what they can offer employees, but really the people within a, you know, an organization that know best what they need from their employer are the employees. And so they're able to go to this website, see these different ideas and figure out, oh, that would help me and my family, or that would help, you know, my colleague, because I know that they've been struggling during, you know, COVID or even prior to COVID finding childcare. And so the employees are really able to find a lot of resources for themselves as well to bring to their employer. And then they say, here, this is packaged so beautifully and nicely in this wonderful online toolkit. Here's how we can implement it at our site.
And Molly, when the chamber got involved, can you talk a little bit about how the chamber got involved in this, why, and what you're hearing from constituents with the chamber about the need for this?
Absolutely. I think for those who have been in San Luis Obispo for a long time, and even those who are new to our community, who are parents, you can attest that childcare, finding quality childcare has never been easy in our region. This is not a new issue, but it is becoming harder. And so I think one of the things that's been so fantastic is Wendy in particular and First Five's involvement in the business community and their willingness to say, hey, we want to help solve this. We want to help solve this challenge, because pre-COVID and over the past few months, you know, it's been incredibly challenging for businesses to retain talent, to have amazing people who are ready to be productive, who have less absenteeism, who have less turnover. And those are the things that a family-friendly workplace can give you. And so it's definitely in the best interest of businesses' bottom lines to be family-friendly. And we know that, you know, amongst our SLO Chamber members who, you know, range from northern Santa Barbara County, even to southern Monterey County, the vast majority are small businesses. You know, they are people who have a lot of contact with their employees. They want to do the right thing, and they are working on keeping the lights on and the doors open. So the beautiful thing about this toolkit, like Maggie was saying, is that it's packaged so easily. It means that the effort to take that one little extra step, whatever that means for your business, if you're starting at zero or if you already have a lot of infrastructure to support businesses to be flexible, this toolkit helps you take that one step up, take the one, you know, go one rung higher on the ladder to be better. And, you know, we talked about, I was just listening at the beginning of this segment, you talked about this show is dedicated to topics where today's choices affect tomorrow's community. Mm-hmm. And that is what this toolkit aims to do. It aims to empower businesses to take a choice today that helps our broader community tomorrow. As we look for solutions, whether they be policy and government or, you know, workforce, how we see childcare changing, businesses are really empowered to be a first step in that, to have a better place for our whole community moving into the future.
Yeah, I can attest to the fact this isn't a new issue. You know, my daughter was an only child, and that was 43 years ago when she was born, and I was challenged to find childcare here. It really was rough to do that. And I can't imagine people that have more than one child that they're trying to find childcare for and support that and find wages to support it. Can you talk a little bit about, and you know, I'll leave it up to the three of you who wants to first address it, but you know, we keep hearing about the disproportionate impact of COVID now on women in the workforce. And you know, what are you seeing, Molly, from the workforce here in San Luis Obispo County?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I think even just last week saw a lot of headlines coming out that for our nation in December, employers, you know, we lost about 140,000 jobs. And when you net it all out, women are 100% of that, of 100% of that workforce that's been cut out. And there's lots of reasons for that. That, you know, BIPOC women in particular are overrepresented in industries that have been disproportionately impacted by COVID-19 closures and those health-related risks. But I think on the flip side of that, the very clear trend shows us that any, you know, pandemic economic recovery strategy must include solutions that help women get back into the workforce, that help, you know, BIPOC women of color in particular, because that's how we're going to reinvigorate our economy. That is the smart, economically savvy plan. And knowing that childcare, so many, you know, schools have gone remote. I think Maggie can talk a little bit about how so many childcare centers have been forced to close, and if not, to drastically reduce their capacity. Childcare is becoming harder and harder to find. And that's not going to end when people start making their way out of remote work into in-person work. So this is going to be, I think, something we need to be very focused on when, you know, hopefully reopening is right around the corner. But that's not going to be the final part of the story.
I think the other thing, too, that to be aware of is that, you know, that if we look at the percentage of women that have gone out and got even advanced degrees in the last 10 years, those are advanced degrees at a very high cost in terms of student loans. And now with women being the force of the workforce that are not able to work, that aren't able to use their degrees, it puts them behind in terms of the earning ability to have that degree work for them.
Absolutely. I mean, we saw right before the pandemic, I think it was February 2020, if we can all remember what feels like 30 years ago right now, women had for the first time really significantly outpaced men in the workforce. There was, you know, we had gone beyond parity for our workforce. And there's lots of details to that, and it is not perfect, but it is something to note. And all of those gains have been
lost
by the pandemic. And childcare is not going to solve all of that. I don't want to, you know, sort of put this out there as a silver bullet, but it's a key piece in allowing women who want to be in the workforce to be able to do that. And locally, we saw right before the town hall that we were just talking about, Chamber did a survey. I think we reached 400 to 500 working parents in our community. And we did that because we've been hearing anecdotally that access to childcare was hampering people from being in the workforce. And on the flip side, we were hearing from employers that they couldn't access talent, but we knew that there were brilliant, educated, smart, productive, creative, awesome people here who were choosing to not be in the workforce for one reason or another. And what we found was overwhelmingly women were keeping themselves out of the workforce because it did not make financial sense for them to go to work and pay for someone to babysit their children, basically. So that is just one more reason that it's in, you know, all of our interests, not just parents, but people who believe in a vibrant community and strong, innovative businesses. This is aligned with that. It is not a women's issue. It is not a, you know, bleeding heart issue. It is straight up economics. Like, if we want a strong economy, this is a great tool in our toolbox to be able to achieve it.
And that isn't going to go away with a vaccine. Yeah, that's going to take a lot more than two immunizations in order to correct. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you on Central Coast Voices, KCBX. You're Central Coast listener-supported radio station. The topic for today's show is We Are the Care Initiative, a San Luis Obispo County-wide collaboration between businesses and chambers of commerce, all kinds of partners, to develop an online family-friendly workplace toolkit. My guests today are here to talk about why it's important, the impact it can have, and how you can access it as an employer or an employee or just as a citizen. Please join me in joining me for the first half of today's show, Wendy Nguyen, Executive Director with First Five San Luis Obispo County, Maggie Payne, Beginning Preschool and Toddler Program Director with the Atascadero Children's Center, and Molly Kern, Director of Governmental Affairs with San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce. We invite you to be a part of the discussion by bringing your comments and questions, calling them in to us at 805-549-8855 or email us at voices@kcbx.org. And you know, when we talk about this kind of a toolkit and this kind of an approach, you know, especially when we're talking about, okay, this is COVID, we've got the economy is suffering so bad. Molly, do you hear from employers, this is a great idea, what's it going to cost me? You know, how am I going to survive? I'm already struggling.
I think, you know, we're hearing a lot of that businesses are facing challenges in COVID. That's unquestionable. And I've been so inspired to see how many changes businesses have made, how much they have really been able to do and to achieve in this extraordinarily challenging time, from a logistical perspective, from an emotional perspective, all of the things that each of us are having to face when we wake up every day, businesses are doing amazing things. And I think on the flip side of, instead of saying, what is this going to cost me? People are saying, oh my gosh, because of COVID, I've already done so many of these things. I've already implemented so many of these recommendations. And we're seeing a lot of, like, I don't know if it would be realizations or really deep understandings of how possible these things are, that this is not a Herculean effort to become a family-friendly workplace, and also recognizing that one solution doesn't actually work for every workplace. And so that's one of the beauties of the toolkit, is the diverse suite of recommendations, because for some businesses, having an on-site child care center is great and it is the solution they need. But for many businesses, having flexibility to work from home, if your child has a day off of school that you don't have off of work, that is huge for employees. And having backup childcare, whatever it is, it looks like so many different things. And I know that Angela and Kelly and Z are going to be able to provide much better examples later on when you talk to them, because they're the ones that are on the ground doing the work. But I think Wendy can probably also speak to the idea that this toolkit came together in one of the goals was to disabuse people of the notion that being a family-friendly workplace is expensive and that it's somehow an extra.
Chris, you had asked a question earlier on in the conversation a few minutes ago about whether this is a toolkit for employers or employees, and right. Maggie talked about how it's sort of both and. I think that the ability to create dialogue and transparent conversation within businesses between employees and employers that helps working parents feel cared for, even in small ways, even just that they're heard, that their issues are heard, that in and of itself is a family-friendly workplace. And so I think there are lots of things that can be done way, way shy of opening an on-site childcare center. And as Molly said, we've got this suite of options. There are five different categories that people will find on the toolkit website. Childcare is one. Flexible work and scheduling is another. Paid and unpaid leave is a third. Health benefits, and then accommodations and support, with really detailed examples of ways that employers can consider options. The other thing I just wanted to briefly say is that it feels like right before the pandemic, both nationally and on a local level, there was this real sense of optimism about building out of family-friendly opportunities and advancing childcare capacity. And now we're in this in this period within COVID where it's sort of a two sides of a coin. We're struggling. We've lost resources and opportunities to invest in our businesses. But at the same time, we recognize more than ever before. So it's like things have had to get worse before they're going to get better. And I would invite anybody listening to this show, anybody in the community, whether they're business leaders, government leaders, parents, childcare professionals, that we all take advantage of this moment to say, we figured out how to do this. Like Molly just said, we solved problems and we instituted practices that are family friendly that we never in a million years would have considered trying. And now that we have them in place, please, please, let's figure out ways to maintain some of that progress as a win of COVID.
Yeah.
Molly. Tag on, when we were talking earlier, Maggie was saying, you know, the drastic changes that she has had to make to her center. And I think some of those changes are going to stick around. And so it really does emphasize the importance of having these family-friendly workplace changes be permanent, because we're not going to have the same childcare capacity we had before COVID when we exit.
Yeah. Yeah. To speak to that, our center, and actually we have some data for our whole county currently, only 13% of our license or 13% of our licensed programs are currently inactive, which is a big hit to a group of providers that was already very small. And those centers that are remaining open are at 76% of a license capacity as a result of group size limitations and also just of under attendance. A lot of families are choosing to keep their children home just because they're, you know, it's a lot of uncertainty with this pandemic. I know my center in particular is actually operating at only 59% capacity. And so the slim choice that we had in our county of, you know, quality, affordable care is that much smaller now and may or may not be even smaller due to the fact that childcare is suffering with the pandemic, with, you know, new costs that were not something that the centers were planning on. And so family friendly workplace is really going to be such a huge piece in helping, you know, our local economy and helping our community when childcare was already struggling to pick up part of that burden. And now, you know, it's really something that I think the employers and the business community will be able to really look at and see how can we keep our employees here? How can we make sure that our, you know, our businesses continue running in a way that we can be successful after the pandemic.
Maggie, is there anything that is being done on the provider side, the childcare provider side, to try and incentivize or supplement or get assistance so that there are more people that are interested in becoming childcare providers or have support in how to do that with PPE or with the protocols that they're going to need to have in place for safety for themselves and the children?
I don't know necessarily about incentives so much. I know that there's just been a lot of extra things that have been kind of layered on top of already strict sanitation guidelines. So I think that, you know, there are a lot of opportunities financially maybe, and Molly, you may be able to speak to this for us, of helping childcare as a small business. But I know that a lot of it is still a big hardship for the centers and the family childcare homes themselves because they already operate on, you know, razor thin budgets. And so this new level of under capacity where you're not getting the income from the number of children that you typically see, and then including PPE for your employees because they're putting themselves and their families at risk, as essential workers on a daily basis. Definitely it feels a lot of stretch, I think, for those in our community that are still operating.
Molly is small.
Molly
is a small business. Is that something that chambers are trying to support?
Absolutely. I think chambers, governments, there is a, you know, as I mentioned earlier, childcare can sometimes be thought of as not a business or some sort of amorphous NGO type of industry, when in reality, they're small businesses that are key to the success of so many of our other small businesses. And so the grant programs that we've partnered with the city of San Luis Obispo to provide, I think, nearly $500,000 of grants going out, the state of California grants, childcare centers are businesses and they are eligible for those grants. And so that's incredibly important. And there's also locally, the Economic Vitality Corporation of SLO County has been spearheading a drive for just those supplies that Maggie was talking about that, you know, are so critical to safe operation of centers right now. They are, there's a drive for that. I'd really encourage anyone to take a look at the EVC's website there. I know that our Chamber Visitor Center is one of the drop-off spaces for people to donate that type of material, and it's critical to keeping these workers, these children, these families safe during COVID.
I want to thank the three of you for being here. This is, we're running out of time in the first half hour, and we're going to visit with three employers in the second half hour, and Molly and Maggie and Wendy, thank you so much. And I'm going to turn it over to Rachel for a brief break while we get ready with the three next guests. Thank you.
This is listener-supported public radio, KCBX, serving South Monterey, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara counties. Thanks for joining us this afternoon and supporting your local station. We're always streaming live at kcbx.org, and you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at KCBX FM. Thanks for tuning in for Central Coast Voices. If you have questions you want to have answered, you can send them to us. Email voices at kcbx.org or call them into us, 805-549-8855. It's 1:31. Latino USA is coming up at 2 o'clock. We'll have a little bit more music before we continue with Central Coast Voices on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Welcome back to Central Coast Voices and our topic, the We Are the Care initiative, a San Luis Obispo County-wide collaboration between local businesses, chambers, and commerce to launch an online family-friendly workplace toolkit. Kelly Boss, Human Resources Director with iFixit, Z Nakasha, partner and co-founder with Carmel Nakasha LLP, and Angela Toomey, Human Resources Director with Morris and Garitano, have joined me for the second half of today's show to offer an employer perspective about today's topic. And your comments and questions are invited. You can call them to us at 805-549-8855 or email us at voices@kcbx.org. And welcome Z and Angela and Kelly. It's good to have you here. And I'm going to start, Z, with you. As a local attorney, and you've been involved in the economic development work for the EVC and the chamber, How did you get involved in this, and what kind of possessed you to want to get involved as intensely as you have with this project?
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us on. We appreciate it very much. I got involved. I went to a Chamber of Commerce Insight Studios event, and at that event, Cheryl Shushan from Patagonia spoke. There was somebody from Promega, and there was somebody from MindBody, talking about the benefits of childcare in the community and encouraging the number of people that were there to participate in providing more childcare for their employers, for their employees. And I was very skeptical because I have a small law firm. We have about 21 employees. And I thought, there's no way that we can actually meaningfully make a difference in childcare. How do we do that? And a lot of people had that same skepticism. I mean, MindBody can do it. Patagonia can do it. And they were giving examples about how certain industries can collaborate together and things like that. But I went back to the office and I was, you know, still skeptical about it. Talking to one of my employees and she was talking about, you know, issues with her, you know, family and her, her kids. And we talked about, you know, other options, like, you know, what if your kid came to the office and so that you didn't have to worry about it and you could help them out during certain times. And she looked at me and she said, I can do that. And I said, well, why not? And it came about out of that, of me attending that conference. And so I decided to go visit Patagonia and to learn more about it. And I was astounded with their operation, what they were able to do. And then I learned that there was a 2-year waiting list, or a waiting list that was extensive in this community for childcare. Wow. And I thought about, you know, if we could shorten that time period, we could attract more people to this community. More people could work that otherwise don't work in this community. So how do we go about doing that? And that's when I got involved, met Wendy. She introduced me to a number of people and got involved through the EBC and other organizations to try to figure out how can we shorten that time frame. We can't afford not to do it, and it only will help our economy, and it'll help the parents and the children in this community.
Zee, had you ever had that conversation with any of your employees about the impact of childcare on their work or their ability to work with you?
I've had it in an indirect way before that. Now we have it on a more regular basis. And a lot of the things that came out of COVID, I think we can apply, as Molly said, we can apply post-COVID to continue to have, allow employees to be flexible, to allow them to do things that we didn't think was possible before. So definitely having more of those conversations now than I have in the past.
When you went to Patagonia, what was it that really kind of popped out for you about something that they were doing that you went, you know, this is kind of like a no-brainer for even smaller businesses?
What stood out to me mainly was how happy the parents were and how happy the children were. And what I learned from talking to the people that moderated their program was that the children that went through their program did much better in school than a lot of children that didn't have that level of childcare or that support. And that's been a critical thing for me, for my wife, and for my family, in terms of making sure our kids have what they need to do well. And so I thought that those parents and those children have an incredible leg up. And what if we all were able to do that as employers?
Yeah. Yeah, I know when I was working and taking care of a young child, it was a given that if a woman was going to be in the workplace, there probably was going to be a latchkey kid at home. And you know, it's horrendous to think back now that was just taken for granted. So unless you had the resources, the financial resources to have a nanny or an au pair or somebody that was going to be able to take care of them. Angela, you are you're human resources director from Norris and Garitano, and Norris and Garitano represents and deals with employers of all kinds of different sizes. Can you talk a little bit about some of the innovative practices that they're talking about with this family friendly workplace or workplace toolkit that, you know, have been impressive to you?
I think one of the things that I'm impressed by the most is when you find a family favored culture in the first place. I think paving that way is really important. And so even before an employer can start to think about what kind of benefits they want to offer, I do believe it has to come from a place of truly loving your employees and their children. If you can master that first, it helps. So some of the innovations that I've seen are just little things. So like if you have the luxury, if whoever's taking care of your child can bring them to work so that the mother can feed them while they're working, and that babies are welcomed and embraced in the workplace all the time, just that they're a natural part of the environment. It's not just babies, it can be dogs or cats, anything you want it to be. I think that is really what impresses me the most is when it's ingrained in the culture. And some of the other innovative things, obviously during COVID, we have gotten super innovative, as have our clients, as to different things. I know one of the fun things that we've done, we brought in even local school principals to help our employees learn how to homeschool their children, or after school programs, dance programs for their toddlers, so that they can get a couple hours of work in while their toddler's dancing in the next room. There's a lot of things that you can do that are free. There are people in the community that will help you. You just have to smile and dial. So there's a lot out there.
That's great. And Kelly, as the human resources director at iFixit now, you've actually been doing some of the stuff with the toolkit. You've been using it since, what, 2019?
Yeah, I mean, iFixit's been around on the Central Coast for quite a while now. And from the beginning, our two founders set up our values to be people, planet, then profit. And so people, the notion of taking care of our people has always been at the forefront of what we do as a business. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, we've, you know, seen our employee demographic change from, you know, mostly college kids or college grads to young marrieds and now to young families. And we have over 30 kids in our workplace. And so we've seen it as this unique opportunity to come up with innovative and creative new policies and practices as a business that we can use to meet the needs of our employees as they enter new stages of life. And so this toolkit is something I'm really proud to have worked on. And it just gives, my hope is that it gives other employers and businesses somewhere to go to start the conversation about how can we start implementing some of these things. And you can start very small, you know, or you can shoot for the moon, but there's a lot of different things in this toolkit that I think employers will be able to implement that will make a huge impact on their employees.
So in starting with this toolkit, you know, one of the things that you did, Z, was you started with a conversation. Is that an important place for people to start? And Angela, I'm going to start with you here. Is having a conversation with employees about, you know, what is it that is some of the biggest issues for them, the biggest concerns? Does that give you somewhat of a foundation?
Yes, that's really, really important, because the different needs of different families are what are going to drive your benefit programs. We have some people that where the need for daycare is obvious. If they can't secure daycare, that's a need. For some folks, it's like, wow, I could have my parents or my grandparents doing this for me or helping me, if only, and then we fill in the if only. And so you really do need to have those conversations about, is it flexibility that you need? Is it time? Is it money? What is the issue? If it's money, you might want to start with a dependent care or flexible spending program where they can use pre-tax dollars to pay for daycare. If it's not money and it's just availability, that's where you really need to get into those flexible spending programs. So I think those dialogues are really important. And I feel like every supervisor out there, if you're listening, you probably have learned the woes of what it's like for parents of small children right now and how hard it is. And so you really do need to understand the unique aspects of the employee base. And I know most of us right now are doing pulse surveys to find out how people are doing in general out there on their own. And, working at home with children right now is still in our top three every couple of months. And so we reach out and have those dialogues once we've done the surveys to find out how can we help. And we're zoning in on those families, those 42 families all the time.
And I think also understanding, you know, I absolutely agree with Angela. I mean, you need to have the conversation, but it's really helpful if you are also able to educate yourself on what options there are out there. Obviously, you know, Angela is going to tell you this too, and Kelly's going to tell you this. There are, you know, laws that apply to employees, and you know, unfortunately, at some point, there's going to have to be a change in some of the laws that apply, because that flexibility is so important. But flexibility is an option, money is an option, having the ability to, I hate to say it, but look, I mean, as a lawyer, but I mean, looking the other way and just letting them have some flexible time, maybe a stipend, maybe something else, maybe having, like Morrison Garitano has done, bringing you know, teachers on site or allowing people to get together in a pod like some places are doing. So, I mean, there's a lot of different innovative things that people are doing that can be done. But yes, it all starts with a conversation and also an understanding of what your employees need.
Yeah, thank you. Kelly, you wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, if I can jump in. I think I've developed a pretty unique perspective over the years because I've had both of my children while working at iFixit. And so I got the perspective of being a mom and an employer at the same time. And so I've kind of been able to draw off my own experience in coming up with, you know, policies and practices that, you know, hopefully would be beneficial to other people going through the same thing. And I just heard from an employee today, you know, I'm pregnant, due in May, where do I start? You know, and it's happening so many times. And it's really exciting to have more families at our business. But I think from my experience, every family has unique needs. Like there's not like a one size fits all like solution for every family, because some families have both parents working, some families are doing full-time daycare, some families, you know, are doing kind of a split schedule to try to minimize costs of daycare. So I think it's really important for employers to realize that flexibility is probably the number one best thing you can offer in trying to figure out ways to meet the needs of each unique family.
Do you think that the fact that COVID came along and employers were forced to begin to be more flexible and creative in how they maintained a workforce or maintained work has added to the possibility that they would be willing to look at something like this now in ways that perhaps pre-COVID they wouldn't?
I mean, absolutely. It's, I think, one of the silver linings of this pandemic in the sense that it's put it very forefront in everyone's face, you know, the chaos that ensued when schools closed and parents are suddenly, you know, juggling so many more things. So I do hope that this is kind of a kickstart to employers to be like, you know, a trial period of like, let's figure out how we can continue to implement things after this is all over. And I think, you know, if they didn't want to think about it before, I think they're forced to think about it now. And I think it can only have a lasting benefit for their company.
And I think, and I'd add to that, I agree. But I also think COVID has had a monumental impact and has sort of made childcare even more important and more problem. You know, the problems are self-evident now. And so I think we're going to have to work a lot harder as we get through COVID to make sure that some of these things are implemented and enhanced so that we can bring everybody back to the workforce in a way that's collaborative. So that's critically important. And it's going to take government, and it's going to take businesses getting involved as well. I mean, government, the county of SLO, the city of SLO, CAP SLO, and other organizations have been phenomenal in all the collaboration that they've tried to do this. But I think private businesses also play an important role model, money, and a deference to the employees.
Yeah. And Angela, you wanted to say something here.
I was just commenting on, you know, we understand the climate that, if we ever return to the office, we're 100% all of us remote right now. But when we do return to the office, we understand that people will be faced with a bigger daycare shortage than we had before. And so we have out of the gate from the beginning told every employee, if for some reason this arrangement is working for you, you can have it as long as you want it or need it. So just that reassurance, again, going back to those pulse surveys, the things people are stressed over, losing their jobs, their spouses losing their jobs, all these things and being fearful of not being able to care for their children shouldn't be one of them. And so we've assured people you can continue this arrangement as long as you need it. And so we're ready for that now. We're planning for that now.
Zee, you've talked a little bit or kind of spoken around some of the policies that exist. And California tends to be rich with employee personnel policies. We tend to be more stringent than any other state with regard to things that bind employers in protection of employees. And sometimes it doesn't necessarily protect employees. It prevents employers from doing things that could be more creative. And I think that's kind of what you were alluding to. Is this something that at some point we need to look at as well, how we can be creative without employers flying in the face of what's legal and what is not legal?
I think I'd like to see that for sure. I mean, there are options that can be done right now. One of the things that they do at Patagonia is they have a flexible schedule that they've managed with their employees. So they're on 4 days. So they work 10-hour days and things like that. So there are things that they can be done right now. And, you know, I asked Cheryl from Patagonia about that. And she said, you know, what's it like as a parent to have an extra, you know, 52 days a year off, you know, so that you can take care of your kids, so that you can go to your appointments and things like that. So there are things right now that you can do. And there are more things that I think that are coming out of COVID that employers should be doing or should be looking at. So that they can give their employees additional benefits. And I applaud, you know, people like Morris and Gartano for what they've done, and iFixit for what they've done for, you know, bringing people in. I mean, it's incredible that a business like that can operate and give people as much time as they need without so that they can take that pressure off and figure out, you know, how best to come back on their own terms.
Kelly, what has been the experience of iFixit in terms of employee retention?
Yeah, we've had great success. We've implemented some things like, you know, continuing people's salaries while they're on leave so they don't have to stress about money. And then when they come back, you know, phasing them back into work and being accommodating with the type of work schedule they need. And in return, we've had, I'm happy to say, 100% retention rate of new parents in our workforce. They want
wow.
And I think that's, it's hard to put a dollar number on that value, but it's huge. And, you know, so many of our parents are such, you know, they're all valuable employees. A lot of them are longstanding employees and we would hate to lose them. And so we just feel like that investment in adding these types of perks and policies far outweighs, you know, the cost of losing them. So I think the cost of retention and recruitment is huge. And I think if we can avoid that by adding some more perks and benefits to keep our, you know, beloved employees coming back, it's absolutely worth it to us.
You know, Angela, Kelly makes a really good point, which is that we don't have a quantifying number, I think, for employers about employee retention. And, you know, especially when you're going back into a situation where you come out of something like COVID, where you've got employers that are looking at the magnitude of people that are out of work, the idea that you can, well, look, there's so many people out here that are out of work that I can pick and choose from, but being able to retain employees that know the job, that have the benefit of knowing how to work within the workforce, that have already integrated, there's value there. How do you teach people to respect that? I mean, or do they? Are you finding that employers are even thinking about that?
Well, I know we've been thinking about it here at Morris and Gartano for a long time because our most common position an account manager, but they don't grow on trees. For commercial lines and things like that, they're extremely complex work products, they're licensed roles. So for us, someone like that that is trained and ready to go is like gold. And
yeah,
pretty much nobody retires, or they can move, they can do whatever they want, but they stay with us. And so we also would echo the 100% retention. And part of it is because we have this flexibility. And that's where the flexibility started. Back in 2015, we started deploying people from home because we just did not want to lose those employees. They were too valuable. It would take, sometimes we'd have to hire two or three people to replace
exactly
the account manager, just one. And so,
right.
And particularly now during times of COVID, when our clients need us more than ever, we're an essential service. We can't have interruptions. And so telling our employees, clock in and clock out when you can. When you need to take care of your baby, go run and clock out for a few minutes and then clock back in and do the best you can. And that's just, we've been having people piece it together because, as Kelly said, you know, the price to put on it is Yes, we understand there's reduced productivity. We know that. But we also know the cost of if we had no one filling that job, no one calling those clients, what that would mean for our business.
Are there policies that need to be put into the workplace in order to make this work that you have determined? Are there certain things that employers need to be cautious about?
I think when we started this endeavor, you want to build the right infrastructure. First and foremost, again, it's got to come from a place of loving your employees and wanting them to succeed. And then once you've done that, you're going to want to have some basic agreements in place, telecommute agreements, and also be able to, now it doesn't matter because as I said, we are 100% remote, but you also want to be able to identify who make the best candidates for flexible work schedules and who make the best candidates for people to work remotely. That's really important to identify some of those characteristics. We used to think not every job was suitable for it, but as we found out it is. I work in HR. I never thought in a million years that myself and my whole team would be working remotely, but they are. So yeah, you want to have some policy around working remote or flexible work schedules. And you certainly, I would say, if you aren't sure if you want to keep those, that you would have limitations or whatever you felt comfortable, to put into place. But it doesn't require a ton of infrastructure. You need a robust, somebody in charge of IT that understands how to deploy people and what that entails. I think that it's a combination of an HR effort and an IT effort to build that infrastructure if you want to start going the route of flexible workplace, not just flexible work time.
There's also a lot of studies right now, if I can add on to that a little bit, that Adam Grant just came out with a study that people that work 6-hour days and even make the same compensation are as efficient and sometimes more efficient than people that are working 8-hour days. So there may be some things that are coming down the pike that give people that extra flexibility, being able to go home at 3 o'clock as opposed to 5 o'clock or 5:30. That give people that ability, give parents that flexibility. I've always had it as a lawyer, and a lot of managers have it, but a lot of people that work for us haven't had it. And that's been true over my entire career. And I've always, I've always wondered how people do that, how people survive. Even my wife's a physician and she doesn't have that flexibility. So it's a valuable commodity if we can give it to our employees.
I want to thank all of you today. This has been a wonderful topic, and unfortunately, we've run out of time. I've got Rachel telling me, hurry, hurry, so we can give her time to run to her other board. I want to thank my guests for today's show, Wendy Wendt, Executive Director with First 5 San Luis Obispo County, Maggie Payne, Beginnings Preschool and Toddler Program Director with the Tascadero Children's Center, Molly Kern, Director of Governmental Affairs with San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce, Kelly Boss, Human Resources Director with iFixit, Z Nakasha, Partner and Co-Founder with Carmel and Nakasha, and Angela Toomey, Human Resources Director with Morris Garitano. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX and made possible by underwriting by Joan Giller Sargent. Next week, Fred Monroe will be your host. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for joining us today.